Hello, welcome to Cerebral Flex. You got Jareth Blackstar over here with Namwon Sakati, your host, as usual, if you didn't know. This is episode 11. It's about the Library of Alexandria, the creation and destruction, which is, I think, one of the best things we've covered.
One of the best?
Yeah, man, this is interesting. I had fun reading about this.
I hope I hope people enjoyed this one because it's a little bit of what everybody seems to like. It's like a little bit of conspiracy, a little bit of history, a little bit political. We'll see.
Little bit of seasoning.
Yes. The seasoning meme.
So, yeah. I'll just get right down to it.
All righty.
Library of Alexandria started about 2,300 years ago. After Alexander the Great, who was a student of Aristotle, went out and he wanted to be a conqueror. So he conquered to the east all the way to India. He conquered to the west, to like North Macedonia and like, areas of Greece. He expanded his empire pretty far. And then, he's from Greece. Isn't that accurate? So yeah, it's not like he had to conquer Greece, but he conquered northwest of Greece and west of Greece. But he wanted to take geographers and cartographers and all sorts of people with him so that he could collect all the data and all the knowledge from all these areas, because he was really interested in the cultures. Even if he was, you know, murdering a bunch of them, he was wanting to collect their history. And unfortunately, he did have the idea of making a library, but unfortunately he died before the library was ever created. His successor, Ptolemy the First, some people say the library actually wasn't created till Ptolemy the Second, but Ptolemy the First definitely enacted this guy named Demetrius of Phalerum to make the library. And I just think this story is phenomenal starting here. So what did you take from your studies? Or what you already knew?
Well, I knew that the Library of Alexandria was one of the world's like greatest libraries, and that it was burned down. It was a huge travesty, but I didn't actually know how it was founded. And being the big history nerd I am, I was a little ashamed that I didn't know that it was Alexander the Great who started the idea of having this great library. One of the things I thought was interesting about the library is the fact that it wasn't the only library at the time. It was just one of the biggest. But their big thing was they wanted to catalog and record every single book that they could get their hands on. So like they literally hire people as like book hunters who would like go out into the world and like find these scrolls and bring them back. And then they would copy it down and transcribe it. The king or governor or whatever of Alexandria, he like wouldn't let merchants who came in with books anything like that.
That was Ptolemy the Third. He enacted the book hunters, and he made a law that every boat that docked at the port of Alexandria, which was named for Alexander the Great, people should know, because I didn't even know Alexandria was named after Alexander.
That's what I was saying. Like, as a history buff, I you would think I would know that. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, right?
Duh.
Put two and two together. He was taking all the scrolls off the boats, and his scribers would copy them on their papyrus scrolls and actually give the copies back to the boats, and they kept the originals. And he also made papyrus illegal to export from Egypt so that the books had to be made there in the first place.
Right.
He like made sure that all the knowledge was centralized around the city, which is, I think, awesome, but also like wrong, because he's like gatekeeping knowledge, you know?
He's a capitalist.
I just think it's cool they were trying to get all of it under one roof. And like he made a, I forgot who created the Pinnix. Uh-huh. It was like a 120 volume thing that housed all the different subjects.
And well, because it got to such a point where like there were so many scrolls and stuff, and there wasn't really like a cataloging system, that they were like it was impossible for scholars who'd like come up from Greece to find anything.
Yeah. Some nerd was like, we need a Dewey Decimal System.
It was probably an INTP.
Probably. Thank God for that.
Yeah.
a lot of people, including Eratosthenes, who initially calculated the circumference of the earth using shadows and a guy that walked from one city to another and angles. But like he got his initial knowledge to do that from the Library of Alexandria, and he wouldn't have been able to do it without the Pinnix, without that very detailed cataloging of the information. I think that's so cool. And it was actually part, Library of Alexandria was part of a museum. The word museum comes from first mousa, which meant muse in Greece, in Greek. And then that later was called Moseon. And that's what it was called. Library of Alexandria was part of the Moseon, which later became the word museum that we use today, which I thought was fascinating.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Moseon means seat of the muses.
Okay.
So, and the initial Moseon was in Library of in Alexandria was to the nine goddesses, or the nine muses, or something like that.
Huh.
I believe there were nine of them. But yeah, it's beautiful. Aristotle had like his own little school there. There's like a bunch of different little places you could go, and there was classrooms and lecture halls. You and I would have been absolutely like giddy every day we woke up, because like Ptolemy the First paid for your life there. All the scholars that went there to study had free room and board on Ptolemy's tab.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's amazing. We just go there and
it's the exact opposite of what we do now with scholars and scientists and stuff like that. We would rather pay professionals and professional actors and politicians and football players and stuff obscene amounts of money as opposed to like some nerd who's trying to figure out the mystery of time travel and how to teleport. I mean, I would rather have teleportation than shitty Pirates of the Caribbean movies, but that's just me.
I second that.
I don't know why I picked Pirates of the Caribbean. It's the first.
I mean, pick any of them, Transformers, whatever you want. I mean, X-Men.
I actually kind of like the first couple Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Oh, no, no doubt.
Sorry, but I mean, Johnny Depp.
Those are lovely distractions.
I just think that when Johnny Depp can afford 14 houses and, you know, a professor who teaches at, I don't know, Berkeley can barely afford a 2-bedroom apartment, it's kind of sad.
Yep.
What we're saying is let's bring back free room and board for all our smartest people.
Seriously.
Yeah.
But I mean, that kind of goes into how it was destroyed and hiding the knowledge. And I think the governments of the world, you know, fast forward, are still wanting a lot of that sacred knowledge hidden. They don't want people to be super smart. They only want a very small percentage of people to be able to do, you know, astrophysics.
Right.
They don't want a bunch of super intelligent people running around, because then they'd probably consume less things. They'd probably go to less stupid ass movies. They'd probably eat less gross food that they're marketing. They'd probably do a lot more intelligent things. They'd make more intelligent choices.
Well, the interesting thing about we're Alexandria, the Library of Alexandria, was, I mean, Alexandria, I don't think it is. Was it part of the Greek Empire? It must have been if it was named after Alexander the Great.
That Hellenistic era was a mix of both Northern African culture, Egyptian culture, and Greek.
Right.
So that they merged all of it together. So you wouldn't necessarily call it a Greek society.
We'll call it Hellenistic. That Hellenistic period then.
Yep.
The interesting thing about like the Hellenistic period is it again goes back to like the whole like pagan pantheon of gods. So you had Ares, who is the god of war, who, if you want to break it down to a psychological level, Ares, if you're very like angry and in the throes of like combat and violence, like you could be tapping into the spirit energy of Ares. Whereas if you were a scholar who was trying to sharpen their arguments and go to the Library of Alexandria and read the great philosophers, then it could be said that you were tapping into the source of Athena and all that. Whereas when you have these monotheistic religions that come in where there's only one God, it's very easy to gatekeep knowledge. Whereas when you're more spread out through a pantheon with all these different gods who have all these different pieces of knowledge, I feel like society as a whole is a little bit more accepting and I don't know, open about their practices. I think when it comes to gatekeeping knowledge and stuff like that, we'll talk about a little bit. A lot of it has to do with the Catholic Church. Like, a lot of people don't know the Vatican has, I think it's something ridiculous, like a 50-mile long library underneath Vatican City that nobody's allowed into, which we'll go into a little bit later because I think it kind of ties in nicely to the burning of the Library of Alexandria. But knowledge is essentially what it comes down to is knowledge is power. And I'm against the gatekeeping of any type of knowledge. That's why I think public universities should be completely free. I think that, excuse me. I think even like if we were talking about like the occult community, like there's a lot of like snake oil salesmen and stuff like that who will try to teach you the secrets to magic and stuff like that. And I don't think that you should be gatekeeping knowledge at all. I think it's perfectly fine to charge for services that you offer. But when it comes to making people pay for knowledge, I think that's fundamentally wrong.
Yeah. Thoughts? No, I think that's perfect. I think it's ironic that private universities and places to study now are costing more and more and more so that less and less people can go there. And I feel like what?
I think there's a difference too between like everything gets so commoditized now. And I think that we need to make like a distinction between what a product is and what knowledge is. Because knowledge shouldn't be a product. It's not something you make. It's something that you know. It's not like you're writing a story, right? Like knowledge is something that is known and you should be able to access and share. Whereas if you were writing a story, you should be able to charge for that because you have created that. But when it comes to things of like science, history, and stuff like that, I think most of that stuff should be free.
Yeah, and I mean, you can go on Khan Academy and take courses for free and learn these things, but you can't go to an employer and be like, I know all this because of Khan Academy.
Right, you know? Right. You don't want to be like, where's your degree or whatever. Yeah.
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 So they are creating a product, and the product is you. That's what's changed.
Right.
They've learned how to make you the commodity.
And I would say that they're not even necessarily as concerned about they're not even necessarily as concerned as they were during the time of the Library of Alexandria with compiling the knowledge. I think we've kind of plateaued as a species as far as like what we're willing to like experiment on and learn. Like it seems like most of our resources go to how we can create bigger nuclear bombs and less about, you know, how to maybe cool down the earth or, you know, space travel or other cool things that would be helpful and not destructive. It seems like we've kind of plateaued on the field of knowledge for the betterment of the human race. And we're kind of just commoditizing and buying into the destruction of it, which is sad.
Well, we're running out of food. If you look at the crops in California and the heat waves they're having, it's over 130 degrees out there.
Yeah.
And they're not able to grow food anymore. And the guy said, like, they're probably not going to be able to grow garlic in a huge garlic sector. So garlic's going to go through the roof in price. Lumber's through the roof in price. Like, everything's going up and, like, nobody's solving the problems. We're just arguing. Like, in Myanmar, you know, they're warring. The people are creating an army. They're actually – it's kind of cool because they're unifying a ton of cultures over there. Like a lot of the people that have been abused by the military are coming together, even though they previously were enemies.
Uh-huh.
And so they're making a military of the people and going against that military. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. So the Library of Alexandria. if we had something equivalent to that now, I mean, It'd be awesome. They had like 40,000 to 400,000 papyrus scrolls throughout that facility.
Right.
I mean, and it was all categorized with that Pinnex. I think that'd be, I just put myself, I imagine, I close my eyes and I imagine walking through those halls and like going to the subjects I'm interested in, really just hashing out the details with people like you or like other people that would, I'd be so happy every day.
Right.
They'd be like, Colin, it's lunchtime. I'd be like, oh, is it?
Yes, a lot of people would argue that the Library of Alexandria today can be like found on the internet because we can compile everything on the internet.
Yeah.
But again, because we're a monkey species and we don't ever look at history and the repetition of it, the Library of Alexandria, which we'll be getting to in a minute, was burned to the ground. So all that great knowledge, all those beautiful papyrus scrolls just went up in flames. And the internet itself is a little bit more protected from fires. But at the end of the day, we're not protecting the knowledge we have enough, in my opinion, because the internet could go down. Like if you want to get super conspiratorial or whatever, like an EMP could go off and kill all the electricity on Earth. So it's less about, knowing that we have like the knowledge out there, more about how do we protect the knowledge that we now have in a way that if we were to like lose the internet, which is a wild concept, I don't think people could imagine how would we have that knowledge? Like the knowledge that is out there, how would we keep it? So that's an interesting little thought piece to think about.
I think the sad thought on what you just said is that people wouldn't be freaking out about the internet collapsing because of all the knowledge that they now have lost access to. They'd be all upset because they can't find out what Kim Kardashian's doing next week.
Well, they'd be upset
because people don't fucking use the internet for knowledge.
They'd be upset because they wouldn't be able to get their weekly dose of the Cerebral Flex podcast.
Right? They'd be like, what about the Cerebral Flex podcast? Yep, that's what's on people's minds.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I also thought that it was cool that all these scholars and stuff that would come up from Greece, they'd come up and the king was pretty much like, free room and board to you, sir. And there were so many cool things that they were doing. Like you said, one of the scholars he discovered, what was his name? He discovered the circumference of the earth.
Eratosthenes, that's my boy.
Yeah, like he was pretty damn close. Like he was only off by like it was very a small. Wild amount.
Yeah.
There is another one. I should have written notes on these Greek names, but these there's so many. There was one who had actually discovered how to create a steam engine. Like he had pretty much figured it out 1,000 years. Before the concept of a steam engine even came up.
Yep.
We tend to also like not think about these things, but like Rome had like public bathhouses. They had public transportation. They had aqueducts. Plumbing. They had plumbing, like these insane things. And then we just lost it when the barbarians sacked Rome. And the church became the primordial, you know, all-knowing, all-seeing empire for about 1,000 years.
Hey, the savages had to sack Rome because the Romans were acting like savages.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They were acting like savages.
And the guy that created that library catalog, his name was Callimachus.
Callimachus?
Yeah.
I like
Callimachus.
It.
These names are fun too. There's a lot of fun names.
Yes.
But yeah, there's all right. The Homer, Odyssey, all that stuff was re-scribed. The Homer? There. What?
The Homer?
Yeah, the Homer. Homer.
The Homer, my guy, the Homer.
Yeah, all that stuff was scribed there, or like translated more clearly. They created a Hellenistic language, which was a lot more clear,
right?
From all the influences of Greek to Egyptian to an Afro based language.
Right.
Yeah, it was a really good time. I mean, I would have enjoyed the Hellenistic era. You had black people, you had white people all coming together.
Yeah. I mean, that and that's where I think a lot of people also don't understand, like, where Cleopatra, she's typically, like, depicted as white, is because during that Hellenistic period, there were some more, we'll call it, mixing of the races, and there were actually white people who were ruling Egypt. But if you actually go further back down the line, a lot of the pharaohs and stuff were actually of African origin. So
yeah, Egypt's one of those wonderful white people places.
Tend to think of the world as all white all the time, and it wasn't that way.
No, it was pure black in Egypt. There was black rulers at one point, then there's Asian rulers at one point, then there's white rulers at one point. It's crazy. But I don't think Greek people would say that they're white. I don't know what they call themselves. Olive
skinned. That's typically how you would describe the skin tone of a Greek person. Yeah.
I don't know. I just heard that, like, people from Sicily or southern Italy don't classify themselves as white sometimes. I'd have to read into that.
I don't know. All of it's silly.
Yeah. It is all silly. But I think it is important to see where cultures were able to unite rather than divide. Yeah.
Yes.
So I think if there was ever, like, I don't know, if Russia and Asia ever got together. I mean, there is a Buddhist state, a federal oblast in Russia, where it's mainly Buddhist and Asian, which is kind of cool. Kamilkia, I believe.
Okay. Either way. No, yeah. Like, I don't know if it was the absolute first, but it was definitely one of the first, that Hellenistic period where there was, like, an intermingling of all the different ethnicities. And that was cool. And look what they built. They built the Library of Alexandria. They were going to build steam engines. Like, that's cool. And then you have this dickhead Julius Caesar who comes along, and he's like, man, this Alexander the Great guy, like, fuck him. I want to be the greatest. And he came in, and the narrative is that during his attack on Alexandria, he set fire to, I believe it was their bay where their ships were.
Yeah.
And it was a little windy out that day. And fire spread.
And he documented that attack too, but he left out the part where some of the library was burned. And apparently that was common for Julius Caesar when he was writing things. He left out damaging things about himself.
Yeah, you know, like destroying the world's greatest library at the time. Again, it wasn't the only library at the time. It was one of the libraries at the time, but it was like the pinnacle of what a library could be.
It's like writings about, like, Thomas Jefferson or George Washington or something. It's like they're never going to be like, yeah, I raped one of my slaves last night. You know, you always hear about how great they were and cornerstone of the nation and all this blah. But yeah, we didn't mention that they did make a sister library, because the Library of Alexandria just got so large that they made a sister library in the Temple of Serapis as well. So that was like a Library of Alexandria 2.0.
Well, did that one, when Julius Caesar burned down the first one, did that one also burn down, or was that, like, kind of like saved?
I'm trying. He said Julius Caesar turned the Temple of Serapis one into a Christian church. Well, this Patriarch of Alexandria from...
How could Julius Caesar have turned it into a Christian church? Christianity was...
No. The Theophilus was a Patriarch of Alexandria from 385 to 412 CE. He's the one that turned the Temple of Serapis into a church.
Okay. All right.
And then that's when the collection was destroyed by the Christians that moved in.
Oh.
Or taken to Vatican City and put underground. You know.
No. So you have...
Hypatia. Sorry. Hypatia, it always excites me. So during that time period, one of the Christian dudes, one of the Catholics, is like, no, I want to learn. I want to see what's in there. They murdered him. I just wanted to say that. He was tortured and killed by the Christian church because he wanted to know what was in those books.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was really excited there. I had to jump in.
That's not surprising at all. So you have Julius Caesar. He comes in. We don't know if it was on purpose or not. I am of the mind that it probably was on purpose. I don't think it was just this accident that happened, that it was just especially like, you know, it was gusty out that day and some embers got on some papyrus and it just went up in flames. highly unlikely. I think that it was, he saw it as an opportunity to destroy a bunch of knowledge. And if you destroy knowledge and you are the only one who has knowledge, then you ultimately have power. Because I don't think Julius Caesar was an idiot. I think he was actually very, very Trumpian in a more intellectual way. So I think he probably burned that shit down so that he could feel better about himself and consolidate his power a little bit more, which is terrible because, again, it comes down to, like, you have this great vast wealth of knowledge and some asshole comes along and is like, I can commoditize this, and takes it over. And it set us back, again, like they were figuring out the circumference of the earth. They were creating like steam engines and stuff like that. There's all these different things, and they set the human race back quite a little bit for a little while. We had this thing called the Dark Ages right after Rome fell. That was not the greatest period on Earth. So yeah, I think people give Julius Caesar a little bit of like slack for it, and they don't tend to think that he was that nefarious. But knowing that he was an emperor and that, again, he was all obsessed about his empire and his name and stuff like that, he probably most definitely did it. So they burned down the above ground level to the Library of Alexandria. There's actually like a sub level to it as well. And then, like Nam was saying, a couple hundred years later, the rest of the Library of Alexandria was burned by, there's conflicting reports if it was Christians who did it or if it was Muslims who came in and did it. Again, history's too muddled. You could believe what you want, but the main thing is it was a monotheistic religion that came in and destroyed all of this knowledge or took it away and hid it. If you believe the church line, like he was saying, the church very well could have taken it as they do and hidden it away. The Islamic State at the time, they probably would have come in and just straight up burned it and destroyed it. The Christians, they're a little bit more nefarious in that way. They like to put on a, it's hilarious for a religion that preaches honesty. They like to put on a big show and do very, very dishonest things behind the scenes. And so we could get into like the Vatican. Underneath it, there's this 50-mile library underneath Vatican City where they have all these old tomes that supposedly like chronicle the history of the human race. We don't know exactly where it starts because nobody's allowed to know. There is not a very well cataloged system for what is in there. If you go to Vatican City as a scholar, you have to be like credentialed and stuff like that. And you can only check out 3 books a day. That's the max that they'll allow. And if you like mistakenly check out a book and it's not the book that you wanted, you're like, oh shit, it doesn't have what I wanted in there. You're not allowed to like return that one and then like check out another. You have to wait till the next day. And most of the knowledge that is hidden beneath Vatican City is you're not allowed to look at it past the date of 1939. Now, there's a bunch of different speculation because what happened in 1939? World War II started. So the church obviously has done very shady things throughout all of its history with consolidating its power. It controlled the world for the better part up until and a little bit during the Renaissance era. From the fall of Rome to like the era of the Renaissance, the church was pretty much the empire. You had warring states like France and England, but they all got together and listened to the Pope. That's why the Crusades were a thing. So there's all this knowledge that we don't have recorded by these priests and monks who would document history, and the church is continuing to gatekeep it and not let anybody have it up past a certain year. You could speculate because they won't let you look at anything really of significance past 1939 that they're probably trying to hide some ties to Hitler and the Nazi party and what happened there, which I don't think would surprise anybody. Hitler, for the majority of his life, was a Catholic. And the church likes to have this this facade of being impartial to everyone. But there's definitely an agenda there. The church has its own banking system. It has its own library that it's hiding from people. And again, it goes back to the gatekeeping of knowledge. So could scrolls from the Library of Alexandria be there instead of having been burned by this emperor? Yes. Yes, it could. But we will never know unless the church falls or someone invades it and gets inside there and opens all those tomes.
The also, world may never know.
Vatican City is its own state.
Yes.
A lot of people don't realize that the church, literally in the middle of Italy, it considers itself still a part of the Roman Empire. It's called the Holy See of Rome. And it is its own state. It has its own laws, its own police force, its own banking system, everything. Which is really weird for a religion to have. It's kind of odd.
It is weird, but there's also a very small, there's another small state that's considered its own country, kind of in Italy, called San Marino.
Yeah.
It's to the northeast. And I mean, Monaco is a really tiny country that's considered, you know, its own thing. And Andorra, which is another interesting one in between Spain and France. It's an odd one. Anyway, but yeah, Vatican City is definitely bizarre in the fact that it's religiously based.
Completely religiously based.
Yeah.
I think they use
the euro there. Do they use their own Pope coins?
No, I'm pretty sure they use the euro. Because you know they want to be a part of the world currency as well. They're a business just like everyone else's. So yeah, interesting stuff. It seems with the rise of Christianity being the religion of Rome, that is when you begin to see the dissolvement of the Caesars and the emperors and the Roman Empire as a whole. They get attacked by the barbarians. And then the world is kind of like in chaos for a very long time. And there's all these warring kings about bloodlines and stuff like that. Interesting, sad times. A lot of progress was stalled during that. With the burning of Alexandria. And again, it wasn't the only library in the world, but it was one of the world's largest, and it had cataloged a lot of different events, a lot of different like works by philosophers and stuff like that. Like, that's really what I'd want to go see, like all the arguments between these philosophers who were like questioning, like did they have a postmodernist movement that we don't know about as we have now, like the great French postmodern movement of right after World War II and all that. Like, how far ahead were they in like thinking about the things that we're discussing now?
I don't know, but I am happy that after it was destroyed, that scholars were able to dig up enough to like categorize ancient Egypt's history into like 30 dynasties.
And yeah,
that's even used today in modern studies of ancient history. I mean, that's kind of a weird phrase, modern. Anyway, modern, ancient, whatever. Current studies of ancient history.
Yes.
Use the stuff that scholars have dug up from what was ever left. But yeah, it was two-part destruction. One was the Julius Caesar. He's mainly blamed for the first one. And then that that emperor in Rome, Theodosius. How do you say that one? Theodosius, I believe is his name.
Theodosius.
Yeah, he's the one that declared Christianity to be the only legal religion of Rome.
Right.
And he ordered all pagan temples to be destroyed. So that's
always good.
Yeah, right. And then that's why the Temple of Serapis was completely destroyed, because of that dude. It's kind of like modern times with Syria. Uh-huh. Like all the ancient, you know, that was the last.
Also, I don't know if anybody, this is just an aside, but Serapis, the Temple of Serapis. Serapis, if I remember correctly, and you know what, I should probably Google this, but while I'm Googling it, I believe Serapis was like a Greco-Egyptian sun deity. And yes, that's what he was. He was a Greco-Egyptian sun deity. My cult knowledge sometimes helps me in instances like this. But like he was kind of what the classic Italians would call Lucifer. So yeah.
Yep.
Take it away for a minute.
Okay. I was just saying how sad it is that humans throughout history have destroyed places of knowledge. Like in Syria, we destroyed the last Aramaic speaking city, and we've destroyed lots of temples through war. And I just really don't get how throughout time war is constantly used, and we see it destroying all the knowledge we once had, yet we continue down the path of war and destruction. So maybe humans are just wired to be in conflict forever. That's something my dad always has taught me, but I don't know. I don't want to believe that. I don't want to believe that human beings are only wired for conflict and will always destroy all the knowledge we gather, and only the people in power will have it all secretly collected somewhere and nobody has access to it. That'd be a very depressing thought. But yeah, I think in 2002, the Bibliotheca Alexandria opened. So that's where they're trying to start back. There's a huge movement to get another place in that city in Egypt to have all the knowledge gathered, which I think is great. They've so far collected a lot of African studies and a lot of African history there. I'd love to visit that place.
Yeah. There's a lot of interesting things, and there's still so many gaps in like the knowledge that we have.
Yeah.
Like we're not even talking about like the tablets that they found in Mesopotamia that go back all the way to like Sumer and stuff like that. Like there's just so many different like recorded instances of history, but then there's all these gaps because there's been all of this destruction of history. And it's both cool that we're finding all of it, but it's also sad because it's also just extrapolating upon the fact like how much we've lost we might not ever get back, you know?
Exactly. And it's like, if we were a cooperative species, how much space on Earth could we have a bunch of resources collected, like knowledge? We
right.
have like places all over the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that Bibliotheca Alexandria houses the world's largest digital collection of historical manuscripts.
That's
also
dope.
The world's largest repository of French books on the African continent. So all the time France went into Central and mainly Central Africa, they they did what Alexander the Great did. They murdered a bunch of people but collected the history and the cultures.
Does that make it more okay if you go in and you murder people, but you record their history?
Well, it's like I go to my next door neighbor's house, I bash down the door, I murder them, and then I'm like, thanks for the new recipes I got from that cookbook.
That was like a really good analogy, actually.
I came really out of it with something delicious to eat.
Here's your photo albums. I don't need those. Let's throw those in the trash. But these recipes, I found man.
Interesting, expensive comb that they've groomed their dog with. I will spread this knowledge.
I like that. I like that. That was a really good analogy, sir.
Thank you. Most of my analogies are way off.
That was a good one. That was one of the better ones. Yeah. No, if we didn't have these stupid, even if we had wars, but we were more like respectful of like the knowledge that we've acquired and we cared more about people's like cultures and personal histories and stuff, there probably wouldn't honestly be a whole bunch of wars, because we'd have so much knowledge about each other. We'd realize there's probably more in common than there are differences. There's always going to be like contention and stuff like that. But yeah, it should be like, I think it's ridiculous that there's certain weird arbitrary rules that are in the Geneva Conventions. And there's some good things, like you shouldn't torture people and stuff like that. But there's also like no protection of sacred land sites for where people like come to worship, or centers of knowledge. Like, you would think that people would want to protect and preserve as much like knowledge and culture so that you could study it and understand it. But instead we have this fear of the other, where we're just like, burn it to the ground. No. Yeah. it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't know what's worse, just going in, murdering everyone and not learning anything from them, or going in, killing them all and like taking all their knowledge and sacred history and like putting it into your culture, kind of using it to your benefit. I don't know what's worse.
Ethically. Well, then you run into like the cultural appropriation thing too. Like, if you start like, when does it go too far? Like, when you murder all the Native Americans and then you start doing their sacred prayers and dances as a white people, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like when you house their grandparents' bones in the basement under the University of Illinois, and then you have a white frat boy put on a Chief Illini Wick costume and pretend to be a Native American, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, that's wrong. That's very wrong. There's been like discoveries recently too in Canada, which is a little bit off topic, of like all these like mass graves that they threw these Native American children in and stuff. So there does become a point where the gathering and the collection of knowledge and cultures crosses a line once you, you know, create a mass genocide against people. I'm not sure, because we don't have all the records, but I feel like the mass extermination and genocide of people was maybe not as bad as it is in the modern age as it was back in the day.
I don't want to say that was just a normal thing. It was just a normal thing. You wake up like, honey, I think we'll go off for a genocide today. Yes. Sounds nice.
Yeah. Like, these Redskins, they have too much of the land. Let us take a little bit more and then name the football team after them and not change it in the year 2020.
Don't worry. Don't be guilty. Later, they'll just classify it as ontological expansiveness.
Oh God. Yes. Yes. Let's not throw back to the last episode if you were paying attention. but yeah, no, the destruction of knowledge and now the commoditization of knowledge is really what the podcast should be about. I mean, we've talked about the Library of Alexandria and we've covered it, but it seems to be like the theme is, oh my goodness. Hang on. What?
No, I think we should classify Cerebral Flex as the babbling of two slightly intelligent friends discussing their views on anything in Iran.
But yeah, I think what the podcast or this little discussion we're having is about is like, what is the correct way to utilize knowledge and like share it with people, and how gatekeeping knowledge and having these like structures wherein you have to pay to be educated. That is why the world is so stupid right now. Like legit. That is why people like look at Europe and they're like, ah, Europe is like sophisticated and learned. Well, yeah, their centers of education are free.
But I also think it's cultural, because you can pick up your phone any day, any of you, if you're hearing this, pick up your phone. You can Google whatever you have questions about.
Yes.
If you have questions about history or science or math or anything, you can look it up. And when it comes to like very complex math and science, you might need, you know, someone to show you a few things. But like, honestly, we have knowledge in our pockets while we walk around every day and nobody takes advantage of it. So I would say it's more cultural than it has anything to do with paying for it. People just have no want or practical need to learn things anymore. They just want to learn their one little specialty or their one little thing. And then that's it. It's all small talk and garbage for the rest of time. It's all completely shallow bullshit other than what they do for a living. And I don't know. It's just, I feel like the modern times is so empty. It's like so vapid.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that we went from the Library of Alexandria and trying to compile all this knowledge so that like the world's greatest minds could like come together and learn and discuss? And
because I think
where we are today,
I think a bunch of meathead psychopaths said, hey, no, it's not knowledge that wins everything. It's just brute force. So watch me do it. I'm going to go and kill all these smart people over here and take all their shit. Now look, who's really the ruler? So the animal kingdom really is number one. And that's what we've concluded, is that, you know, might is much more efficient for power than knowing more, because the cool kids used to be the philosophers and the scientists. And now the cool kids are your football players and your athlete, any, you know, just glamour and glitz and muscles and tits. And I was just making a rhyme. it's just this like shallow, brainless, I feel like we're already in zombie land. It already happened. Like we're already surrounded by zombies.
Yeah.
Like Walking Dead are already among us. They consume a bunch of resources and they don't know anything.
I think it was inbreeding.
I don't. Yeah. I mean, no.
Maybe yeah.
In the South.
No, I like all those royal bloodlines and stuff that. Like, so like you had Alexander the Great, and he would be, you know, he was taught by Aristotle and he was great. And then a bunch of brothers and sisters continued the bloodline down and down to keep the bloodline pure. And again, if you're inbreeding all the time, you're eventually going to be of less intelligence. So then you have the smart scholar being like, hey, you know, here's this moral dilemma. And he's like, no, my name's Julius Caesar and I want to rule the world. Fuck you. And I think that is also a big part of it. There's like this silly superiority complex where these families eventually, like, they valued knowledge and they valued their smart people. And then it's like continuing on down the line, you get more and more Donald Trumps as the bloodlines continue, which is why politics is stupid.
Because they're all inbred. No. No.
But, and that's why I think we need to switch our systems of government every 100 years or so. Because like democracy at a certain point turns stupid. And then you have dictatorships. And those can be okay if you have a benevolent dictator. But then that's stupid. Then you have monarchies, and sometimes the monarchy's good, and then that turns stupid. Like there's no set way. Yeah.
You have communism where people actually own the means of production, and then that gets stupid.
Yeah. They're like we the workers own the means of production, except nobody actually wants to do any work now, and we've killed all of the farmers and taken their lands, and we decided that we weren't going to farm because we didn't learn how to before we killed the farmers, so now our country's going to starve.
So I think we've concluded that dumb meathead men are the ones that destroy any type of civilization,
yeah,
religion, culture.
Yes.
It's always a meathead, violent man.
Yeah, you can't even argue when it comes to the church aspect with the second burning of like the Temple of Serapis and all that. Like, it was a man who claimed that Christianity was the number one religion, that it was the religion. Burn all the pagan temples, burn all the knowledge. And it is men who run the church. Like, women have never had a role of power in the church whatsoever. Even if you look at the history of like their saints, like Saint Bernadette or Saint Teresa of Avila and stuff like that, who were like nuns, like they were treated terribly because they posed a threat to the power of men. So yeah, it comes down to that small dick energy, bro. Small dick energy.
It's sad. We haven't come very far.
No, we haven't. So yeah, it's dumb meathead men who destroy knowledge and gatekeep and try to put a price tag on everything. And it's stupid. It's very dumb.
So yeah, I mean, it's funny that most of our studies just conclude with this horrible toxic male thing coming in destroying everything.
Well, it's because, in the words of Carl Jung, they're not integrating their animus properly.
Yeah, which was our least liked podcast.
Yeah, our least liked one, because people didn't enjoy the truth that was spoken. You got a history in psychology, and then you got talked to about how consciousness works and all that. And you're like, no, I don't want it.
I don't want to integrate.
I don't want to integrate the shadow. I don't want to know how to respond to my animal.
I just want a green yard and a bag of chips.
Yeah, I want a green yard and a bag of chips. And you know what? That's fine, except the price of chips is going to skyrocket with inflation, and your green yard's going to die because we used ridiculous amounts of water every year to water our lawns. And I want to move to Washington State, but you fuckers who are watering your lawns are taking up too much of the resources, and it's irritating me because I want to move there, but there's not going to be any fresh water there.
I wouldn't move west. You look, man, at the aqueduct levels over there? No.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's irritating. What the fuck, guys? Why do humans ruin everything good? That's what all our podcasts come down to. Humans ruin everything.
I was looking at I was actually listening and looking at our podcast about eating meat, not eating meat, episode 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was driving, I've been driving a lot lately for work, and I was just looking at how awkward humans look. Like, you look at like a squirrel or a bird or any of these creatures, they're kind of majestic. And then you look at a human and they look all silly with their little like jean shorts. And they're like, you know, we got little fat bellies and we walk all stupid.
We waddle.
Yeah, man, we just look stupid. Like, human beings in general just look so weird. Even the skinny ones are all dangly and alien looking. Like.
Yeah.
But if you look at like a deer or a fox or a cat, any animal, they look beautiful. But humans are just these awkward, weird creatures bipedaling around.
Yeah. Yeah.
No tails, no fur, no wings. Just this weird naked monkey that thinks they're better than everything else that kills everything off.
This weird naked monkey that clothes itself.
Yep. Super insecure about everything. We're weird. Yeah, so this Library of Alexandria was destroyed by weird naked monkeys, and that concludes our podcast. Click the like button, subscribe.
Yeah, this one's going to be a little bit of a shorter one. Not because there's not a lot to cover, but I don't know. We're going to see if people respond better to a slightly shorter one as opposed to a longer one. If nobody responds either way, then we're just going to make them however the fuck long we want, because nobody's paying attention anyway.
If we don't get more followers, we're going to start making 5-hour podcasts just so we can catalog our own discussions.
Yeah, we're going to sit down together, not in a room apart from each other, and we are just going to become very inebriated and continue to talk and talk and talk.
That was actually probably be more fun podcast anyway. We were going to get like a fat joint, and we're going to drink some beer, and we're just going to like, we're going to get crunk. We'll probably have a chessboard out. We'll just like.
Yeah, I was going to say, there will probably be like 30-minute interludes of just silence as we viciously play chess against one another.
I love it. I love the future of this podcast.
All right. Well, if you guys enjoyed this one, hit like, share, subscribe. If you're listening to it on the Spotify's or the iTunes or all of the things that we've put it on, then share those with people too. We are on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, pretty much any of the big podcasting things that you could find.
Yes, Mr. Blackstar has put a lot of work into this. Please check out just the audio if you hate our faces.
Yes, if you don't want to look at our faces, listen to our stupid voices. And if you don't want to listen to our stupid voices, that's too bad. You should. There's people with a lot stupider voices.
Great selling point, sir.
Yes. All right. We will see you guys on the next one. I think the next one we decided we're going to discuss the Federal Reserve because we talked about storing wealth of knowledge. So now we're going to talk about storing wealth. And maybe I'll get weird and I'll talk about the 13 bloodlines, but I don't know. So we will see you guys on the next one.
We're going to end up looking like JFK.
Yep. All right.
Have a good day.
Bye.